On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard another episode of The Fish and First Cast this morning to the Mid-North Coast with a fishing report from behind a tackle shop counter where he gets all the good intel, all of the goss with Cole the Waymaster Trenneman, a saltwater fly with Stephen Gaynor, the fly boat skipper, hitting the freshwater as well with a fly rod, and we'll head down to the Snowy Mountains with Peachy, who joined us last week just before sitting for the Fly Fishers International casting instructor's exam. I'm a bit nervous. What if he flunked? What if he failed? We'll find out. Stinker, all at sea, adrift with a motor that would be better off as an anchor that doesn't work at all, and looking for redemption after last week's duck going out and not catching a scale. How will he go this week? We'll find out on The Big Fish. The man who should know where they're on and tell us all on The Big Fish is behind the counter of the tackle shop at the moment at Port Macquarie, the one and only Cole the Waymaster Trenneman. Trenno, good morning, first of all.
Morning, sir. How are we?
I'm very well. Where are they biting on the Mid-North Coast?
Well, mate, it's one of those years that we haven't had the floods for a change and that everything's a little bit slow. The water's a bit too warm and the mullet haven't quite moved yet. I was just saying to a bloke here before, I said there's still a heap of mullet in the river and they haven't actually moved yet. So, like this year, we haven't, unlike other years, we've had a heap of flood water. So that sort of gets them up and moving. So, yeah.
I hear that there are massive numbers of juvenile mulloway, which is a little bit of a worry because if you catch one of those in a school in the river, you can catch 40. You just want to leave them alone. But are you hearing that? Because we've had 4 or 5 years of good floods, which I think has led to good recruitment, good spawning.
That is correct, mate. And the other thing I've learnt too, that the fisheries have let, I think it was 10,000 juvenile dew, and I think it was about the same in flathead, go in the Hastings River too. So I've heard that along the grapevine. So, yeah, but I got friends of mine that have got LiveScope. They've been up back of both rivers, and I reckon they've seen schools up to 200 or 300 of them between that, say, 50 and just under 70, around that 65-centimetre mark.
Oh, I've got to let those go. They've got to be over 70, haven't they?
That's correct. Only one over 70, yes.
And one fish.
That's it.
Yeah, very, very strict limit to make sure that the stocks are healthy. But it sounds like the Hastings is a good spot to let them go because it's a recreational fishing haven. There are no nets to catch them. That's always a problem, isn't it? I don't think they stock places where the commercial nets are because they catch too many of them.
Many of the juvenile fish, yeah, and that's sort of a bycatch by the netters too. They're allowed so many for bycatch, but you know, same as the beach haulers, they're allowed so many in bycatch. So, yeah, but mate, look, what I was saying, there's been some nice brim around, but they're not down on the breakwall yet. They're still up the river. They're still up around, say, the mouth of the Marae and up around the railway bridges. The highway bridges. So, in the river here, so they're not actually moved down onto their normal grounds where they sort of school up before they make a run or go for a spawn.
Yeah, well, they've got a run. They run, what, after the mullet and the blackfish start to move as well? Is that the usual scenario?
That's correct, mate. There's quite a few blackfish around, but they're not feeding. They're just all just rolling around and doing whatever they have to do. So, they're starting to show in numbers, but the rocks, out on the rocks there, it's pretty hard for blackfish and drummer because of the warm water. If it drops down a degree or two, like it does gets down to under, say, under 20, 10, 19 degrees, that's when they'll all start moving. So, yeah.
That's a very interesting tip. We're talking to Cole Trenneman at the tackle shop in Port Macquarie. So it's sort of a transitional period. It doesn't seem as if it's kicked off yet, but because you love your drummer and blackfish off the rocks, don't you?
I do, mate. I do. Look, there is the only good thing that's come out of it is the size of the tail. There's been some cracking tail around, and there's also plenty of, I wouldn't say undersized fish. There's a lot of those, but there's still a few fish around up to that meter, jew fish around on the beaches and that sort of thing. That's been good. There's been some nice brim out on the beaches. So everything's not far away. It's just got to drop down a degree or two and everything's got to go. Get them westerlies, mate. Everything will happen.
Yep, wait for those cold westerlies and it'll all fire up, hey? And look, we lost another rock fisher at Fraser Park last week. Those Taylor, if you, after Taylor, find a nice gutter on the beach, you'll catch just as many there as off the rocks. Is that fair to say?
That's exactly right, mate. I'd rather fish the beaches for it anyway. For an old fella like me, it's a bit safer. Not as nimble as getting around the rocks, as I found out yesterday. So
I hope you didn't have a tumble.
No, mate. I didn't have a tumble. I nearly did, or it was a little bit touchy there for a moment. Just realising that the knee's not as good as what it should be.
No, it should be on the sand. And what do you look for in a gutter for Taylor if they're the target species at the moment, Trenno?
Well, depends on what if it's going up to a full moon, I'd rather fish a washy gutter. So, you know, one that's got a bit of depth, but a lot of white water banging, not banging hard at the back. But you don't want sand getting stirred up right through it because I don't like coming through sand. But it's got an open, it's similar to a jew, mate. If you find one for a jew, like, what was it, the other night I was down at the spot there, and it's a hole. So it's a fair-sized hole. It's probably about 50 metres, 60 metres in circumference. Quite a good depth of water, probably about maybe 3 or 4 metres of the hole is. But when you look south along the beach, you could see the whole thing opened up past the breakers for about 800 metres. You could see on a 45 degree from the hole, there was this gutter that ran out that way. So I'm thinking, well, top of the tide, that's where they'll be. And they were. There was jew in there and there was Taylor as well. So, yeah, it reading your beach, that's what I like. I like a nice big bar, say about 30 metres, 35 metres out the back there so you can cast, or even 40 metres so you can cast to it. But it's got white water, but good deep water at your feet.
Yeah, that's a great tip, Trenno. We're with Cole, the Waymaster Trenneman on the mid-north coast, and the Taylor, probably the target species, and the Mulloway at the moment. But I was talking to Alex Bellissimo about this, and he, you know, puts a lot of thought into the beach structure. And I've seen it happen quite a number of times. You get a gutter set up like that, as you say, the fish could come in from outside the deep water, so it had that nice channel out through the big waves and out the back. And then he was thinking that the bottleneck, the end of the gutter, is a really good spot where it hits the inshore bank, because that's where the food is being scoured out by the wave action. And I've seen that plenty of times, people at the deeper entrance to the gutter not catching as many fish as people up the, you know, the far end where it's getting shallower. So what are your thoughts on that?
I've actually had a similar result to an open both ends. You either fish, I like to fish a corner, what I call a corner. So when you're coming in where it's all not breaking and then it starts breaking, I like fishing on that corner because I reckon that's a little highway that they come in off the deep water straight in underneath the froth and bubble there. On a new moon, mate, it doesn't matter. You fish. I usually find somewhere right in the middle. Sometimes in the middle of a gutter where you've got an entrance, but both ends, you'll find dead water where it stops. So that's where your bait will be sitting, because they don't have to swim as hard. Probably only for a part of the tide, maybe only 2 or 3 hours of the tide. Then it gets a bit of momentum and off it goes again. So yeah, that's what I don't mind doing.
And what's your rig for Taylor in the surf, Trenno?
Oh, it's a real technical one, mate. Jesus, it's hard. It's the old KISS method, mate. Sometimes it'd be a spinner. Sometimes it might be a hard body. Like I throw a lot of hard body lures in there as well. Ones that only swim about, you know, two or three feet down underneath. Big metal vibes. So if you can buy them, I usually use those. The other one is because if I'm using braid for them, I'll have a trace, a swivel, a braid down to a swivel, then I'll have about a foot, I'll talk imperial here, about a foot, maybe 14 inches of trace, another swivel. That's where my sinker runs, and I'll have it on a sinker slide or a brass snap swivel. I'll have it on that, and then I'll have another about 16 inches, nothing bigger than 18 inches on the trace with either my gangs, which will either be two 5.0s with swivels or 3 5.0s with the swivels, depending on how nasty they are. Now, if they bite me off, I'll put 3 on.
Yeah, I got some nice Taylor right at my feet in the gutter the other day, and then there were some older fellas further up who had the old paternoster rig who were casting with a big star sinker, had a lot more weight than me, and they were getting salmon and sharks and things further out. It was interesting to see that the different rigs. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I like the paternoster rig, and I use that if there's a bit of an onshore, like if you've got an easterly, you know, that pesky little 10 to 15 kilometre an hour one that's just enough to helicopter your bait. I use a paternoster rig with that, or just normally I'll just have a run and sinker rig down to a short trace with me gangs on it that way, and I use a bit of slab of bonito or tailor, big tailor, love small tailor.
Yeah, very, very interesting, and the Dewey's love it as well.
Oh, they do, mate. Yes, they do.
Well, that seems like the go then. Go for the tailor. They don't mind these sorts of conditions, but you reckon that the drummer will fire up once the cooler water comes in?
That's right. Well, I've been hearing reports from down Foster Way and down a bit further that they're getting drummer down that way. So the water must be a little bit cooler down there. They haven't gone off. Look, blokes are going out and getting twos and threes, maybe four, but they're not getting their bag of 10, which is quite surprising this time of year.
All right. Well, all in anticipation for the big rock blackfish coming on. They are the great, great fish. I know they're one of your favourites, but gee, big tailor in the suds off the beach isn't too bad either.
No, mate, no, nothing better. They fight better than a Jew, and the beautiful thing about them, they release quite easily. The big girls, you get them in, take a quick photo, put them back in the surf, and off they go.
That's the way. I don't mind a slab of tailor grilled either. I think it's a beautiful fish to eat fresh, but not everyone's cup of tea.
No, my wife loves a salmon, and I'm going, really? So she wants some salmon, so I'm on a mission this weekend to get her some.
Well, she's got interesting taste. She loves you too.
Well, that's right. I did post something this morning on Facebook, and I said, and I had a little note up top that this will explain a little bit more about me, and it's a bloke holding a fish, and the caption is, you wonder why I like fishing. It goes back to a kid running through, getting hit on the head by, like, you know, falling out of his chair and going down a slippery dip with his head banging both sides and then running into a roller door. It's quite funny to watch it. And then, like I said to everybody, I just thought, well, this is just gives you a little bit of what I was, this will explain a lot more than what you think.
You don't have to be a masochist, but it helps.
Yeah, that's right.
Tight lines, Treno.
Same to you, mate, Eric.
Our man on the mid-north coast, Cole the Waymaster Trenneman at the Tackle Shop.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Central, and I'm heading north. I've had this ticket for my destination since the day I was born. I'm on the 437 in a boxcar like a hobo on the run. And if today is the first day of the rest of my life, then let it city is just some crowded shanty town. I'm on the 437 stowed away. There ain't no window seat. There's a fella playing solitaire, and he bets against himself and then he cheats. There's another guy who's got his eye on a piece of pie, but she's just a photograph. It seems that everybody's dreaming the dream of how to get what they need. And I'm moving up to the fishing town, where our boots and the flannel shirts are handed down. And I'm moving up in the fishing line, where people get together themselves a really good hold down. Oh,
97 out of Central, and I'm heading north. And I've had this ticket for my destination since the day I was born. I'm on the 437 in a boxcar like a hobo on the run. I'm on the 437 out of Central, heading for Easy Street. And I'm moving up to the fishing town, where our boots and the flannel shirts are handed down. I'm moving up on the fishing tide, as far as I can tell, the city is far behind. I'm moving up to the fishing town, where people get together and the world slows down. I'm moving up in the fishing line, where people get together and have themselves a really good, good time.
Good, good time.
We're gonna have a
good, good time.
And I'm moving up to the fishing town.
You may recall on a previous episode of The Big Fish, the great fly versus bait debate when it comes to Ludric fishing. And we're at a phenomenal spot in Sydney Harbour with two professional fisher guides in the one and only Stephen Gaynor from the fly boat, who was on the fly rod, and Craig McGill. It was one of the best episodes ever. And I think the bait won, but surely Stephen Gaynor, the winner is the person having the most fun. Is that fair to say?
100%, mate. 100%. Now, it's just funny that you said the bait won. I was pretty sure the fly dominated that day, but I might have been biased, so I'm not too sure.
Well, I think you were the winner because both McGill and I wanted to steal the fly rod off you, and we thought that that, in the end, was more fun. I mean, the fish were great. What a good spot. I mean, what a beautiful spot.
So good.
Remember, we had the giant naval exercise and massive aircraft carriers looming right over the top of us as they went up the channel. I mean, that was just spectacular.
Sounds like a normal day on the harbour, mate.
It's a happening place. Hey, is it a little early for the Ludric yet?
No. Look, they have started. This year's all over the place, mate. We've got big trevally in the harbour early. So the Ludric go around. I haven't really started targeting them yet just because we're still aiming for other things. But given another month or so, that'll be our go-to thing. If the Kings don't show up, it'll be Ludric all the way, especially on fly.
And those beautiful silver trevally, they're a fantastic mini sports fish, aren't they?
When they're on, mate, they'll eat anything. You know, little surf candies, clousers, shrimp patterns. You know, crab patterns, they literally eat anything. And they're so much fun. And geez, do they go hard. You know, a trevally at 40 centimetres will give you a run for your money.
Absolutely. No, they're brilliant, brilliant fighters. And they turn side on. You can't stop them. An underrated table fish as well.
Oh,
and 100%. Plenty of them.
An amazing, amazing sashimi for the kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're the best raw, aren't they? They're beautiful with a bit of pickled ginger and a bit of wasabi and soy. They're just a gorgeous fish and very easy to clean and very easy to get the bones out. They're probably the best fish for whacking the slab off in 5 seconds ever.
And they're so underrated, you know. Like, I don't know, mate. We go into all this stuff of chasing kings, but trevally, can't go past it. I love it. I love it. But, hey, the good news is the kings are coming back. I feel it. We actually started catching kings the other day, and we haven't seen kings consistently now in 2 years.
Where do they all go?
Well, I'm getting phone calls from friends in Tasmania on the Derwent River that they're saying, Steve, why don't you come down here and catch some kings? So I'm a little bit, which correlates with what we've seen over the last few years, you know, a real increase in waters and water temperatures. I know this isn't great for farmers, but I'm looking forward to this Super El Nino because that'll bring back cooler waters, and cooler waters will bring back kingfish, hopefully.
Speaking of kingfish too, a very good friend of mine down there, Ross the Fly Boss, has been catching heaps of beautiful kingfish. But the legal size there is 45 centimetres with a possession limit of five. So I hope that in Tasmania, so I hope they survive to get back.
I think they will, because what I've noticed in Tasmania, they don't hold in places like, you know, in Sydney Harbour, for example, when the kings are on, they'll sit on one spot for 2 months. From what I'm told in the Derwent, there's not really a lot of spots where they're holding, you know, wrecks, or I'm sure there is, but they're not as well known as Sydney, I'd say.
Yeah, I think 45 is a fairly small size compared to 65 in New South Wales.
Yeah, which, you know, even 65 is a bit small, really, if you speak to some people.
Yeah, well, you've got to give them a chance to breed. So that's positive. And the blackfish are always just extraordinary in that place, aren't they? I mean, and particularly and they're in nice clear water too, nice oceanic water. They're big and they're clean. They're lovely to eat. It's a great thing to look forward to. I think, you know, those specialised Ludric fishers would be really keen for the cooler water to come in.
The other thing I'm getting excited for, mate, is the brim. Like, we've had an amazing brim year, and we've been doing a lot more brim on fly, which sounds very boring, but it's very challenging.
What are your techniques?
Again, shrimp patterns, throw it in, one long strip, let it sink. Watch the tip. It's like buzzer fishing. You're watching the bridge, waiting for a tick and strike. You know, and then when you're not watching, you just get absolutely hammered and you're on. So it's like, you know, it's fishing. Does your head in.
Around the yachts, under the hulls of the boats, particularly the ones that don't get maintained well?
Yes. Now, that is always a great thing to do. Those on a high tide, you'll always get brim. I just really enjoy fishing that hour before high tide, just before the tide, you know, when all that water's coming up over the freshly covered, you know, oysters and the brim are just waiting, mate. They're just waiting for that opportunity for a feed, and that's my favourite time. But I love doing the shoreline. I know a lot of people do them off the boats. I love the shoreline. It's just something about it. Actually, you know, you're hooking 40-centimetre brim 30 centimetres from the shore, from a rock. You know, you can't go wrong there.
Yeah, they do like that structure. Oh, it's great. You get so many options, Stephen. I mean, I know the kingfish are the, you know, the royal species that everyone aspires to in Sydney Harbour. But I'd be happy to catch Ludric, 40, 50-centimetre silver trevally, 40-centimetre brim, that flathead mulloway, I mean, all the other things that are there, they're as good as anything for me.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And it has been, look, I've got to say, it's been a great year for all the other species. We get so kingfish-centric focused that when the kings aren't on, we're like, oh, what a terrible day. We only caught, you know, bonito up to 70 centimetres and flatties and brim and trevally. You know, what a terrible day's fishing. And sometimes I've got to question what I'm saying to myself. Mate, we just cleaned up, but I'm complaining that we didn't catch kingfish.
Yeah, overrated. So, overrated.
They are overrated, but geez, they're fun.
They are really the pinnacle of you know, in-close sports fishing. Stephen Gaynor, tight lines, mate. You've got us all salivating to get the fly rods out and have a crack at the saltwater species. You don't need to go to the Snowy Mountains to catch them. We're going down there in a moment to catch up with Peachy, actually. So,
Awesome. Well, I'll be down there next week, so I'm looking forward. I'll be listening. I'll get all the intel.
Yeah, well, Peachy's in a lock-style competition this weekend. He checked in from Bredbow just moments ago, so I'll catch him at Cooma. Tight line, Stephen Gaynor.
Brilliant, Scott. Have a great week, mate. See you, buddy.
Saturday is a very fine day to do a little work in the yard. But when the sun is a-shining away, it makes the work too hard.
It makes the work too hard.
Saturday is a very fine day to get my homework done. But when the sun is shining in May, we ought to go have some fun.
So,
let's go fishing instead of just a wishing. What do you say we go away for a while?
Dig those worms out of the side.
Put them in a can and go get a rod.
Let's go fishing for a day and a half a mile. Let's go fishing for a day and a half a mile.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
I got a new theme song for you. You ready?
Yes.
Row your boat across the Fingal Bay.
Yeah, that's the one. Well, let me tell you, every week I've got a story to tell you. Last week wasn't such a good story. Last week's story was that I went fishing, and for the first time that I can ever remember, I never got a bite. So I was disillusioned, and I walked around in circles for the entire week, scratching my head and kicking rocks, and I'm thinking, what on earth? It's like a batsman who gets a duck in cricket, you know, or have an air swing if you're playing golf. It's just no return. And I'm thinking, what have I done wrong? So I've tried every single thing. Anyway, come last Wednesday, on a few days ago, I thought, right, now I'm going to tell all Scott's listeners that I caught some lovely snapper because conditions were absolutely perfect. So I jumped in Stinkpot. Remember, I've got a brand spanking new motor, and I took fresh mullet strips, this season's mullet. Beautiful.
Oh, you couldn't get better bait, John.
Can't get better. It can't get better. And then I had some cubed yellowtail and some king prawns. And then I had a heap of bread to get the burley going. So I've gone down the beach and I've talked to all the fishermen. They're still on the beach waiting for the mullet to come along. And they said, good luck, Stinker, you know. I said, this is it, mate. I said, this is going to... I said, you need a big truck to take home what I'm going to catch today. Anyway, so I jumped in and I shot across Fingal Bay and I was pretty happy with myself until I got pretty close to the apple tree, which is on the opposite, on the other side. And then I thought I better put my life jacket on because there was a fair bit of swell running, a bit over 2 metres, and that's just a bit lumpy. Anyway, so I've put the motor in neutral and just idling, and I put the life jacket on and that, right, ready to go. Then I put the motor in gear, and the motor stopped. I thought, oh, okay, that's all right, no worries. Put it in neutral, pull the cord, motor won't start. Oh, well, give it a bit of this and a bit of that. Nothing, absolutely nothing. I thought, oh, no. Because remember, only 3 weeks ago, I rode home again. I've rode home 4 times, but I've rode home twice in a month. Anyway, I started thinking, well, what am I going to do here? I've got to row again. So there was an east-south-easterly wind blowing, which has sort of blown me towards the surf club in Fingal, anyone who knows the place, unless I row to straight into the south. And then the wind will blow me into Kitty's Corner and I'll get in the truck and go home. So that's what I did. It took me about an hour and a half to row back into the corner. And all the fishermen are there cheering and carrying on as they do. So I thought, what else can go wrong? But as I was rowing, Scott, as I was rowing across the bay, you know, and I'm taking it nice and easy. I'm not going to, I'm not breaking any records, but I'm just rowing there and I'm pretty confident that I'm going to end up in the right place. And then I sort of started to think of some other interesting rowing stories. Did I ever tell you that I rowed against the Australian champion?
I don't recall that, Stinker. I don't recall. What was his name?
Yep, Isla Lee. And he's at Tyndale there on the north coast. And I visited him not so long ago. And he was Australian champion. And actually, he rowed against the world champion. And it was way back in the mid-1960s when Tweed River High School, we had an inter-school visit with Richmond River High School. And I bet you there's listeners to this program this morning that were involved in that. And it went for years. And things like that don't happen anymore, sadly, because they were just so much fun. Anyway, we were asked to bring a rowing team over to Lismore to row against their team. Little did we know that their number one rower was the Australian champion. Anyway, we graded our, we had six in the team, and because I'd never ever rode in a race, or I'd actually never ever rode flat out, I'd never been in a race before, I was number six, because I could row a fishing boat. I row a boat all day, that's no problem. I like rowing. But anyway, I was sort of not ready to race anybody. But anyway, the sportsmaster came over to me and he said, look, he said, we've got a bit of a problem. I said, what's that? He said, our number one rower is not real keen to row against their number one rower. I said, why is that? And he said, well, he's some sort of a champion. He said, then, well, I've asked all the other blokes will they like, and he said, oh, no, not really, ask Clarkie. So, right, he said, do you mind rowing against this bloke? I said, oh, don't bother me. I said, I don't care, you know. So there's only two of us on the Richmond River, and all the school were on a jetty that lined the river. And anyway, I heard this almighty bang, and that was the starting gun, and that nearly died of fright when that happened. And then we both took off. Now, what happens when you're in a rowing race when there's only two of you? You're facing the other direction, so you don't know if the other guy's in front of you, or if he is in front of you, how far in front of you he is, because you can't stop see. And turn around, you know. And I'm rowing and rowing, and I'm thinking, gee. And then everyone started cheering. It was about 500 metres or something like that. And then everybody on the wharf started cheering. I thought, I must be closing in on him. I'm catching him up, and this is good. And I crossed the finish line, and this is fair dinkum. I looked around, and he wasn't even on the water. He'd taken his boat up into the rowing shed and was hosing it with fresh water when I arrived.
He finished about an hour ago.
He had the hose on the boat by the time I crossed the line.
Well, it's no shame. I'm just looking up Isla Lee now. 15 times national champion in both sculls and sweepboard boats. Two Olympics, 1976 Summer Olympics and the 1980 Summer Olympics in Montreal and Moscow.
And that's it.
President's Cup, King's Cup champion, went from Lismore down to Sydney University and rode for Sydney University and the Glebe Rowing Club. So that's a great claim to fame, isn't it, that you took on a 15-time national champion. At least you gave it a go.
Well, it didn't bother me. I mean, I'd rowed my boat up and down the river in the Tweed River fishing, but mainly I'd go with the tide and all that sort of thing. But I also remembered the efforts of a lady by the name of Renee Hyde. Now, Renee Hyde was one, I think, the first female commercial fisher in Port Stephens, I think. It was Irene Hyde, but everyone called her Reenie. Now, her husband, he was a commercial fisherman too, and they were based on Broughton Island. Now, he got pneumonia, and he was in a bad way. So what she did, she put him in the back of the boat and jumped in and started to row in a nor'easterly wind from Broughton Island to Corlette. And she worked it all out. She is a smart cookie, Reenie. And she went with the wind. And then when she got to the heads, the tide was running in. So she just, it took over 4 hours. And she finally ended up where she wanted to end up. So I thought, well, you know, that's the other end of my rowing experience. But now I've got a brand spanking new motor. And I hope I don't have to row again.
Gee whiz, that's just a great story. We're speaking with Stinker, who was going to break the duck. He had his first ever blank at the apple tree, his favourite snapper spot last week. And we were expecting to hear stories of you filling the boat and you know, making up for the bad luck, but you didn't even get to wet a line. Is that right?
That's the story for this week. So really, it's not very inspiring, but I guess it happens to all of us once in a while. I've been very fortunate over all the years, really, because 99% of the time I go fishing, I come back with some beautiful fish. But not this, not in the last fortnight. It's been a bit of a disaster.
This is getting a bit too much. Hopefully next week you've got a happy story to tell and you've been able to get a few snapper for a stinker. But it's great that you can row your little boat. That's one good thing about having a small boat, is that you can row. And you see those bigger boats, I think it's a legal requirement to have a little paddle or so. I mean, what's a little plastic paddle going to do on a 15-foot speedboat? It's not going to get you go around in circles, wouldn't you?
Well, luckily I can always row stinkbot because stinkbot's only 11-footer. So you just lift the motor so you're not dragging anything, and then off you go. And if you, as long as the wind, it's the wind determines where you're going to end up. But to the end of that other story with Isle of Leek, I've spoken to Isle since and actually went and visited him and dropped in, and we had a cup of coffee and talked about that particular day. And so it was great to catch up. And the reason that that we did catch up was because he heard this similar story on this program quite a few years ago. And so he contacted me because he'd heard it on this program. And so we got back together again, which was fantastic.
Oh, that's fantastic, isn't it? You need him as your stroke, I reckon, in the back. Because he stroked a Sydney Cox 4 to a national championship. So he was, when he started out, he was a little bloke sitting in the back. Then he worked up his way up to the oars. So, I guess that's what you...
He was a stroke in the eights at the Olympic Games. But see, when I rowed, I didn't row all that much, even in my fishing boat, because I had a beach umbrella. And I used to remember open up the beach umbrella.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And the wind would blow me all over the river. And so I really didn't do much rowing in that either. But anyway, that's something else. But so next week, it's like one of those stories with many episodes. So next week, let's hope the episode's a bit more positive.
Stinker, you've got to catch some fish. This is getting a bit desperate now. Anyway, hopefully you've got the motor that doesn't break down anymore. I think you got a dud with that last one, and you'll have tight lines next week for us.
Well, let's see what happens, but I'm pretty keen to get out there.
All right.
Hooroo, Scott.
Hooroo, Stinker.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
And as you heard earlier on The Big Fish, there are some good tailor about at the moment. But please, fish off the beach. If you don't know what you're doing, and even then, fish off the beach. You'll catch most of the species you do off the rocks without the risk. Another rock fisherman has died on the central coast of New South Wales. He was swept into the water at the notorious Fraser Park. Another man jumped in to try and save him. Now, Fraser Park, I've been fishing just north of there near Caves Beach, near Catherine Hill Bay, for well over 40 years with my father and my brother and the family. We've got a couple of rock shelves there that are up above the tide line and are pretty safe, but even then you can take a tumble. But that place has been claiming lives, and it'd be terrible to add up the toll and the tragedy that it's created for so many families in New South Wales. There'd be well over 30, I would think, who've died in that particular spot. It's so notorious, honeycombed with caves underneath the rocks, where sadly the fishers are swept back in rather than out. Here's Surf Life Saving CEO Stephen Pearce speaking with ABC reporter Ben Clifford about this latest tragedy.
Received notification from the Marine Air Command that around 1:30 that a rock fisher had been swept off the rocks up at Snapper Rocks in Fraser Park, which is notorious for rock fishing incidents up there. And at the same time, one of our emergency response beacons that we've actually placed up there for that reason was also activated by the member of the public. So, yeah, we responded nearby on-call surf lifesaving clubs from the lakes and also from Catherine Hill Bay, and the Westpac lifesaver helicopter was also responded. And unfortunately, one unconscious male was winched from the water and CPR was conducted, but those life-saving measures just weren't successful and he was pronounced deceased at the scene. And full credit to one of our off-duty lifesavers that also entered the water up there to try and render assistance to this gentleman out in the water, and he too had to be picked up by a passing vessel and taken to a nearby boat ramp as he couldn't assist in that rescue at all either.
Gosh, so a real coordinated response here to, try and rescue this man. How important is that to, have all the agencies kind of working together at the one time?
Yeah, look, you know, we've seen even just with that tragic incident, you know, involving Marine Rescue up at Ballina, that, you know, all our volunteer agencies all work really closely together. And this was a real joined up response from every emergency service. And, you know, there in Fraser Park, you know, it is extremely dangerous for swimming and rock fishing incidents. And really, you know, just shows the importance of wearing life jackets, but also listening to those safety warnings. You know, it was extremely hazardous surf, you know, large waves impacting the rock shells right up and down the coastline. And we had many incidents involving people requiring assistance. And unfortunately, on this occasion, we just couldn't get our resources to this gentleman in time.
And how difficult, you mentioned the hazardous surf warning there yesterday, how difficult were the conditions for your crews that were out there trying to save this man?
Yeah, look, so obviously, at the end of the day, the safest and most successful way was by winching from the helicopter. But yeah, we'd responded our inflatable rubber boats, our rubber ducks from both the nearby surf clubs. We also had our jet skis being responded as well. And you know, around this area, it's really a high potential for dangerous conditions for the responders. And you know, the crew on the helicopter did a magnificent job, you know, winching down, collecting the gentleman and performing CPR. But as I said, you know, just unfortunately, you know, those efforts just didn't result in this gentleman's life being saved.
Do we know how long he was in the water for before he was winched?
Yeah, no, I'm not sure, but obviously because we had received notification by people both ringing 000 and coming to the police, and then also our emergency response beacon being activated. You know, we're just thinking that he must have been in the water for some time with a lot of people observing this, you know, this tragedy unfolding.
And there were some reports I saw online as well, the man clinging to an esky to try and stay afloat. And is that something you were able to confirm at all?
Yeah, so we do understand that some form of flotation device, you know, was thrown to the gentleman. And we have, right throughout the summer period, stated that, you know, if people can get a flotation device to someone and don't enter the water without a flotation device if you are going to try and render assistance. So it appears someone had thrown either an esky or some form of flotation device to try and help this gentleman stay afloat. But once the rescue teams from the helicopter got on site, you know, they found him floating face down unconscious in the water.
Geez, okay. Look, now the Central Coast, we know, is such a popular location for rock fishing. You know, there's all those beautiful inlets and bays and secluded beaches along there. But it was only about a month ago there was another rock fishing drowning in the Booty National Park too. I mean, what's your message for people on the coast there that might be, you know, thinking about heading out? What kind of safety precautions should they be taking?
Yeah, look, you know, we really advocate strongly that, you know, if you are intending to go rock fishing, and it is, you know, the most dangerous sport in Australia, and it's the second highest causation of drownings along the New South Wales coast, that if you're going to do this, it's so essential, one, to wear a life jacket, two, to make sure you've got the right footwear, but really importantly, you know, listen to those safety warnings and watch the conditions. You know, it's just the nature of rock fishers that, you know, they tend to head out on those rock platforms when there are hazardous surf. And, you know, this is the most dangerous times, you know, to be up there. And normally, you know, 9 times out of 10, we would shut every beach because of these hazardous surf conditions. But we don't have the ability to shut rock platforms and rock shelves. So it does come down to people's understanding and personal responsibility. And, you know, all I would say is if someone is washed in, and along the Central Coast there's so many great spots for people to go fishing, but if you do get washed in, it's either volunteer rescuers or paid professionals that have to risk their lives to come and try and save you. So you just need to understand the risk that you don't that you put just to yourself, but also to others.
Surf Life Saving CEO Stephen Pearce there speaking with our ABC reporter Ben Clifford. It comes just 2 months after two rock fishers a bit further to the south died at Little Beach in the Booty National Park in similarly rough conditions. Please fish off the beach if you want to catch some tailor at the moment. I know that the rocks are quite alluring, but a fish is not worth your life, really, and our sympathies go to those families.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
It's The Big Fish, and last week, Peachy left us in suspense because he was heading down to Tumut to join up with the International Fly Fishing Organisation, the FFI, to see if he could pass the very rigorous exam to become a casting instructor. And it's a world-recognized accreditation, but it's not easy. And we talked him up a bit. Well, I talked him up a bit. He's very humble. And I thought, gee, I might have put a bit of pressure on here. If he fails, it's going to bring shame to the Big Fish family. Peachy, did you pass?
Mate, I did. I did. I was very relieved, actually. I could only leave to get down there to Tumut on the Friday morning after dropping my youngest to school. So I got there about half an hour before my test started. And, yeah, I managed to get through the test. I probably made a couple of slightly ordinary back casts, but fortunately it wasn't enough to fail the test, so I got through.
And you've got the CI certificate, a casting instructor, not confidential informant, which, of course, can get you bumped off as a stool pigeon. Different initial. And that means that you're accredited casting instructor.
Well, I'm a CI, which I have to be careful to use the acronym in the right place by the sound of it, because it could be misinterpreted.
Yes, you're not a confidential informant. You're a casting instructor, according to the global body, the FFI. And yep. That's great to have that behind you. I guess you can give people casting tips now and know that they're coming from the right place.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, a huge part of what we learn through the FFI and the CI program is not just the casting side of things, but the teaching side of things, you know, how to kind of communicate these ideas well and get a student, you know, quickly starting from zero and casting a fly line quickly and being able to get out there and put it into practice.
Because it's fair to say it's all about technique and not about strength. You don't need to be, it's not like Rory McIlroy on the tee bombing it away 300 metres. It's all about the physics of it, isn't it? And
very much so.
Many casting instructors have told me that men are often hard to teach because they overpower it and get out of whack, whereas many women who pick up the sport tend to use the angles, use the physics, and understand that it's not a game of strength.
Absolutely right. Yeah, strength can be a more of a problem than anything else in fly casting. I think probably, you know, the most important concept in fly casting is probably tension, maintaining tension, and that means smoothly applying energy through the rod. When you overpower things, you send shockwaves through the line and through the rod, and you end up just creating slack in the whole system. So it all falls apart.
Absolutely. And what's on this weekend? I know you're down at Cooma at the moment, itching to hit the water. What's the event?
Yeah, it's the final round for FFA New South Wales, which is the competition circuit. So we're having a lock style comp this weekend on Tantangara and Angler's Reach, the sort of top half of Lake Eucanbene, which should be interesting.
So it's all lock style?
It's all lock style, yeah.
So you'll be drifting with the drogue and casting in front of the boat and hopefully raising a few rainbows, because I guess the Browns are getting ready to go up the rivers.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure really what's happened with the spawn run so far. I know there have been a few fish caught, but there might still be a few Browns hanging around the top of the lake. I guess we'll see.
All right, well, now that we know you've passed, we can all breathe a sigh of relief, because I thought we put a bit of extra pressure on you there, telling people you were going to take this exam down on the banks of the Tumut River. Did you catch any last week? Did you get a chance to get a fish in, or was it all about the FFI CI test?
Well, I did a little bit of a clinic. Morsi sort of roped me into doing a clinic on dry fly casting for some of the other CIs and some of the other people down there. And we were demonstrating that down on the water, on the river, and there was a particular fish rising in the back of this pool that was taunting us throughout the whole session, and a number of people, myself included, all went and cast dry flies at him, and couldn't get it done. But then at the very end, one of the local guides, a young bloke called Pat Ryan from Tom's Outdoors, came by and he said to me, "Oh, Peachy, stick on this tiny little unweighted nymph and just fish it in the film and see if he takes it." And sure enough, second cast, he ate it. So I ended up getting the fish that had been taunting us for the whole weekend.
That's the beauty of trout, isn't it? That they show you where they are, and if you're good enough to catch them and cast without drag and present something that is similar to what they're eating, then you're a chance. Tight lines, Peachy. Have a great weekend in the Snowy Mountains.
Good on you, Scott. Thanks, mate.
And thanks for joining us again on The Big Fish.
Oh, get out of it, bloody seagulls.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.